Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Love Hour podcast. I am your host, Miss Kev on Stage, and I am joined by my husband and co-host,
The Kev on Stage.
The Love Hour podcast is a place where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of happiness. Kevin and I are not experts, but we do share our experiences and revelations and all of those things. And we often have guests, expert guests, to help aid in our communication and knowledge in this space and to help you as well. And today, we have a very special, special guest on. Someone that I have been a fan of, listening to her podcast for the last few years, and that is none other than Dr. Lori Ann Watson.
Lori Ann Watson, in this piece.
I am so excited to have you here. She is a host of a podcast as well, yes. Foreplay Sex Radio.
Foreplay Radio Sex Therapy.
I always mix it all the way together all the time. And
Sex and Couples Therapy.
And Couples Therapy. They have a retreat that they do every year. It's all of it is fantastic. You guys make sure that you guys check her out. But before we get too far into it, I will allow you the opportunity to introduce yourself to our audience if they are unfamiliar with you.
Okay, so I am a certified sex therapist by ASECT. It's a national organization. And I'm a licensed marriage family therapist and a podcaster at Foreplay. I direct a center of about, I think we have 10 clinicians now in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Greensboro. So we have two areas that we work out of, and we're all sex therapists and couples therapists. And let's see, what else do? I teach at UNC Chapel Hill and Duke in their medical communities, mm-hmm. and their medical, all kinds of different branches of the medical community there, and all sorts of programs, and that's what I do.
I am so excited. Go ahead,
Kim. She's also going to be at the Raleigh show next week.
Yes, I am.
So if you buy tickets, the Thursday show is sold out. Wednesday still has tickets.
Oh, that's so fun. Okay, yeah, perfect.
So just want to throw the tour in there because I'll be promoting enough.
thank you. Yes, we are Love Champions.
I get to see Kevin.
Yes, on stage. Kev on stage.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited for this episode. And the reason why is because obviously this pod, I try to have as many different varying perspectives on the podcast as possible and talk about multiple things, but I can only talk from my experience. And sure. My experience with Kevin and I and our dynamic is that I am the lower desire and Kev is a higher desire. And something that's really important to me is to shed light on high desire women.
Good.
To normalize that.
That's right.
And
we're out there.
Yes. And I wanted someone that had both. And you, I was literally the perfect person because you are a higher desire woman and an LMFT. So yes. I love when people have like the education and you have like the literal experience, life experience right. to make sense of that with the research and education right. behind it. So I'm like, this is perfect. And it's going to be so great because I know the information that you're going to offer these women are going, it's just going to be phenomenal. So I'm like super excited and I keep kissing this mic. I'm going to move it. Okay. Yeah, it's very gross. I did not like that at all.
You gotta kiss other stuff.
Okay. So, yeah, we're going to dive right in.
Just a suggestion.
Yeah, yes. Throwing it out. Right. It's Valentine's Day.
Just, right? You get it on Valentine's Day.
Just a little kiss.
Let me tell you why this is going to be great, because Dr. Lori is always for sexual innuendos, like all the time she catches them.
I am.
Yes.
I am. You know, but I grew up like you did, kind of churchy. And so I didn't hear them for a long time. Mm-hmm. I didn't let myself hear them.
Right. I'm the same.
And then later on, I, you know, allowed myself to. And now I can't stop hearing them.
Yes.
It's like it's everywhere. I hear them
everywhere. That's what she said. That's one of my favorite jokes of any TV show.
Sure. Because
that's how I am. I'm like, oh, that's what she said. said. And then one time my son said, and I was like, that's not what she said. She's going to never say anything to you. You understand me? Not till you're married. And
that's right.
I just didn't want him. I didn't want him to get it at 13.
Right. And he totally does.
But he totally
too.
Got
he
it.
Does.
Yeah. He totally got
So Dr. Lore, I think this is going to definitely be a connection, Kev, because she's always
I desires up top.
Yeah, I desires up top.
On top.
So
and on bottom. And
the side. Side is good. That's side is underrated. Side low key becoming one of my faves. You can go from Netflix and chill to right up in that Ville.
That's
Vaginaville. And then go right to sleep without even moving. Oh, love the side. Ooh. It doesn't get as much play in the Kama Sutra. It's like, oh, upside down, oh, break my leg. Side is solid.
Side is solid.
It's the white bread of sex. Like, you used it so many different ways. Sandwiches, croutons, toast.
Okay,
love
so,
it.
So what we want to do, I think, is start off by offering definitions.
Okay.
Okay. So one of the things that I notice in your podcast, because you guys know that anyone that's a guest on a podcast, I'm a literal fan of. So like I said, I've been listening to this podcast for a few years now. But I noticed that you don't always use the term high desire, low desire. You
True.
Often say sexual True. Pursuer and distancer.
That's right.
Okay, so can you kind of explain? Go ahead.
Sure, it's slightly different, and that's why. So okay. We're talking about sort of the action, the direction of our actions. So a sexual pursuer is somebody who goes toward their partner sexually, asks for sex, initiates. They actually may not be high desire. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but the action tendency is, you know, we feel, usually it is a higher desire person, but it could be, you know, a person who has moderate desire, but who knows and experiences love as sex and knows their partner does too.
Got
so
it.
Eventually they pursue in
they
that
direction.
They take
the onus to pursue the
That's
sex.
Right. You know, they, That's right.
Okay, I understand
that. A sexual distancer is also somebody who, you know, who doesn't feel necessarily sex as love, doesn't necessarily feel that as a connection, but maybe they masturbate every day. You know, so it's a little confusing.
What you
so
talking?
We're talking about an action tendency. So think about this. And I think it's complicated because there's also the emotional pursuer and emotional distancer. There's
I heard
two
that
ways,
difference.
Two ways. So think about, so I'm both.
Okay.
I'm a sexual pursuer and an emotional pursuer. I like talking and closeness and spending time together, and I really like sex, and I feel love, feel pleasure sexually, and like that, and pursue my husband for that. But think about maybe a woman who, she likes closeness, talking, spending time together, but for whatever reason, she's not as interested in intimacy in bed. So she's an emotional pursuer, a sexual distancer. So a man may be, you know, emotionally distant. You know, he's all about
the
his work.
Pursuer.
Right. He's all about his work. His energy sort of emotionally goes toward his career. But sexually, his energy goes toward his wife. So he's emotionally distant, sexually pursuing. Okay. I'm going to throw a couple curveballs. So think about the hookup guy.
Yes.
Okay. So he's sexually pursuing, right? He wants it. But he's not going to give his heart. He doesn't even think like that.
Mm-mm.
So he's emotionally distancing. But so it you know, it's just, it depends on the extreme.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And some people are shut down. I think the hardest guy to work with is the guy who is emotionally distant and sexually distant. But again, he could be masturbating every day.
He
doesn't move toward a partner sexually, right? Because his body is still filled with testosterone. He needs it. But this is about the action tendency toward a partner. So to me, as a therapist, it just helps me clarify, okay, what are we dealing with and how do we help them?
You know? I really like the dive down into this because I think that we often, or at least in my mind, I've coupled those two things together automatically. So high desire is pursuer and emotion as well. Mm-hmm. But what you're actually saying is, how do you interpret love? And the way that you interpret love may be the way that you pursue. So if my interpretation of love is through closeness and talking and this, then I'm going to pursue that type of closeness in, or be that type of emotional pursuit, is the word you said. But if I interpret love through sexual intimacy, then that's what I'm going to pursue.
Right, right.
I love that. I actually really do.
And I think, you know, women, particularly, we are socialized to be emotional pursuers.
Yes.
We have to tune in to really kind of find our power to be nuanced in how we read people and how we think about people. And I think we're shut down socially to be sexual pursuers. I mean, we're told we're sluts, we're whores if we want it. There's not really a much of a healthy view about a woman who wants sex. Either she's, you know, promiscuous or something's wrong with her. And I mean, I do a blog. I get so much great feedback on my podcast, but I also write a blog for Psychology Today. And you know, I'm just trash there all the time because people are saying there's no such thing as women pursuers. There's no such thing as women sexual pursuers. They just, they've never seen it, you know, so.
I feel like we are definitely socialized that a man goes out and conquers. You go hunt
for
food, for women. You have 10 different, you are the man. If you got 10 different
women. You have to focus, right? Yeah. You have to focus your energy on providing and getting. Yes.
For women, if you do that, like you said, it's so it hides the women who are like that. It the women who are open about it, they're called hoes.
Yep.
And the women who are quiet about it, it furthers the myth that they don't exist.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that we don't talk about it as a woman's sexual pursuer. I've just recently told this story. I've told all kinds of stories on the podcast with George, actually, my new co-host. You know, he makes me feel really safe because he's a really good container and holder of, you know, material and what I say. So I feel even better there. But George Fowler, he's the bomb.
He's really good.
Yeah. So what I was saying is, you know, when I was a little girl, I mean, I got the message from my mother that sex was okay and sex was good. But I think as a grown woman, when I got married, I remember asking my girlfriends, this was like the first few months of marriage, and they were all talking about, you know, their husbands and all this. I said, well, what do you do when your husband says no? Crickets. You know, just dead silence. Mm-hmm. They looked at me like,
what do you mean?
Our husband never says no, and we never ask.
Right.
There's never room to ask.
Right, right.
You know, he's asking us. And I just remember feeling like, just this tremendous shame, like what? You know, I felt so embarrassed. And that's why we don't talk about it. That's why you don't hear about it.
Yep.
Is because the high desire woman is not going to chime in at the cocktail party when all the other women are saying, oh, my guy's pawing me. You know, he's all over me. And we're not going to say, oh, mine's not.
Nope.
You know, because you feel like, what does that mean? I'm
what
unattractive.
Does that mean? Yes.
I'm not desirable. I'm not wanted. And so all that. You know, the logical way you make sense of it is that there's something wrong with me.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, so you're not going to talk about that. So that's why you don't hear about it.
Oh my gosh, I want to come back on this point really quickly, but we've run several laps around this already, and running is important, but you need to do that with great shoes. So I want to tell you about Rothy's. I was running errands all weekend, Melissa. I've been running errands since like Saturday, probably, like playing chauffeur with the kids. On Sunday, I did some things. Yesterday, I did even more things. I did the most yesterday. And literally, I did them in my Rothy's. I did all every day this weekend through yesterday. I wore my Rothy's because they are comfortable and stylish. And even when I'm running errands, you look a little bit, kind of want to be cute. Although yesterday, I was looking
amazing,
broke, busted, and disgusted. But my shoes were on point, though.
You know what's interesting? Yesterday, you said, usually when you don't wear your Rothy's, you're saying, oh, my whole body hurts, but my feet are really killing
me. Yes.
Yesterday, you didn't say my feet didn't hurt. You were saying, you know, I'm sore, my shoulders
do hurt.
You never said your feet hurt.
My feet did not hurt, and I've literally y'all know how it is to be a mama on the weekends, running errands, going to soccer games, dropping your kids off at their friend's house, doing all the things. Like, I was just literally just doing all the things. I have the black pair. They're basic because sometimes I be basic. But they go with everything. But they have multiple styles, prints, colors, patterns, anything that will float your boat. They have available to you. If you are in the service business where you are standing on your feet, whether that's a bank teller, a hairdresser, a barber, these are a great option for you. Rothy's come in ever-changing array of colors, prints, and patterns, and they're available in a range of styles like sneakers and loafers, plus many more. It will blow your mind that they're made from repurposed plastic water bottles. In fact, Rothy's has diverted over 35 million water bottles from landfills already. Check out the amazing styles right now available at rothys.com/lovehour. Go to rothys.com/lovehour to get your new favorite flats. Comfortable, style, and sustainability. These are the shoes you've been waiting for. Head to rothys.com/lovehour. Thank you guys so much for supporting our sponsors, because of course that allows us to bring free content to you. So thank you guys so much. Okay, so I want to come back on this like rejection and what is wrong with me. One question that comes up quite often, and I kind of want to do a little bit of a deep dive, is talking about the rejection that a woman feels when she is the sexual pursuer, as opposed to the rejection a man may feel, like where there is, again, crossover, like some of the rejection that both a man and a woman would feel. And then maybe if there is a difference, because women, we may feel things differently or interpret things different. I'm not quite sure, but maybe we can go into that.
Sure. I mean, I think asking for your partner to be sexual with you is really the most vulnerable thing in the world.
It's so
primitive, right? It's like, touch me, baby, in the way that makes me feel good. I mean, it's just so...
Can I please put this inside of your body for a little bit?
Yeah. Or can you put it inside my body for a little bit? You know, I mean, it's tough.
So. Hey, put that in my... put that in my body. All right. Well, can I just finish the game? No, put it in my body now. I want that in here.
Right, exactly. It's so vulnerable. So I think, man or woman, it's a vulnerable ask. But I think men, y'all got company. You know, I mean, there's other men who will sympathize with you and say, are you getting some?
He ain't getting none, you know? Jack. I tried for 3 days in a row. I ain't had something. Oh, wait.
That's right.
But I can see how women don't be feeling like that.
Right, because we don't have company. We don't talk about it. The shame, you know, silences us. And so I think there's a sense of being all alone in it that adds to the feeling of rejection. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my husband and I have worked it out now, but it was a long time. And we talk about it now. And he's, you know, first of all, I think his understanding of what I went through and his sense of, you know, it wasn't how you looked. It wasn't not me not being attracted to you. It was about my own difficulty with that kind of intimacy. You know, he's like, I was a young man. I'd come from this really distant family. Sex was so intimate. And he had desire, you know. He had desire, but it was just, all of it was too much. Living together, getting married, you know, he just felt that claustrophobia. Mm. And sex was a way that felt more intimate. So he backed down. Mm. And I think at the time, oh my gosh, at the time I felt so rejected and I was angry all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was the critical pursuing partner. You don't spend enough time with me. You don't have enough sex with me. You know, all of that kind of stuff. And definitely, we came to the brink because of that. And I think it wasn't until we began to sort of work out intimacy that sex started to work out, because it wasn't that we didn't really know how to do it. We were churchy and we were both really, really naive too, you know? So I think for me also sort of having been churchy and all this was like, okay, woohoo, we're married. Yeah. Everything goes. It's going to be so cool. And then it was like, my partner didn't really want to do everything. It was like, oh no. So I had also, I think that sense of, you know, am I too much? I think that's what the pursuer goes through is sexual or emotional. I'm just too much for you.
As a person. Yeah. I think that's an important distinction. Like, not this ask is too much. I am too much. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, when we come out of childhood, so this theory that we've got going in terms of pursuer and distancer actually comes out of something called attachment theory, which is rooted in science. It is the most researched theory. And we come out of childhood with three different styles. Okay. So one of them is a secure attachment. And this is usually a family where there was enough affection, there was economic security, and you kind of had both parts, good structure, good love. Okay. And so you come out of childhood thinking, you know, I'm an okay person.
Yeah.
I deserve love. And, you know, I should be loved both sexually and emotionally. And, you know, that really makes a difference in terms of how you relate. You're not anxious. You know, you have mood stability. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you come out of childhood with either avoidant or anxious style, so the avoidant person comes out and it's like they didn't get enough hardly at all. So they protect themselves. Mm. They say, I'm not going to need. I'm just not going to need too much. That was more my husband's style, to let himself need sexually, to let himself need emotionally.
I'm not going to open myself to be vulnerable.
Right. It was to be rejected in childhood. So his inner vow is what I call it, was to grow up and say, I'm just not going to need. So his growth path was, how do I let myself need to somebody who wants to give to me? And I was more anxiously attached. So it was like I grew up. My caretakers were intermittent. Sometimes they were there, sometimes they weren't. So I just didn't know. I was always like anxious. Mm-hmm. You know, is it safe to need? Do I need to back up and take care of myself? Do I need to be independent? So, you know, you come out of it, but basically you feel a little frenetic. Mm-hmm. You know, you keep the ask up, you keep the pressure on, and usually pursuers end up being critical. So it was a perfect setup, right? He didn't need, but I kept criticizing him. So he's like, okay, so I am not enough. Right. And I'm like, damn straight, you're not enough. Right? Right? And that's what I'm feeling, because I'm feeling abandoned. Right. And I'm feeling like not given to, and oh my God, you know, I'm in this for life. What are we going to do? And so all the messages he got were, you know, I'm failing you. I'm being rejected because I'm not good enough.
I can see that.
And yeah. Mine was like, I'm being deprived. My needs are never going to be too much. I'm not a very good person because I demand too much. Mm. You know, so this setup is an emotional problem in most marriages. I mean, to some degree or another, we go through that.
Yeah.
But I definitely went through that.
Do you have a question?
No.
So my question is, they're saying that you're so open, and I'm like, this is why I love you so much. Like, honestly, I appreciate all of
it. I'm getting more open. I've told the whole world now that I masturbate. Like, last episode was on female, was on masturbation, and I'd never talked about it really openly before. And George was asking me, and I told this story about how when I was like in my 20s, I was in a dentist chair and I had to be put under. And my big fear was I was going to like come out of anesthesia and tell the dentist that I masturbated. That was my big confession. And so I thought, you know what? So since I've told the world.
Mons pubis, baby. Yeah.
That's right.
That's so great.
So now that I know and have told everybody that, I can
go to the dentist. Schedule that appointment.
I can go to the dentist. I can say clit on the radio.
That's
right.
What is this? Clitoris.
So my question is, for those people, I mean, now that you're like on the other side.
It's funny because, let me just say this.
Yes, just say this.
Churchy people, lots of us, yes. We cannot fathom the idea of masturbation.
Oh, I know.
It is taught that it is sinful and wrong.
I know.
I'm here to help you guys break every chain. Yeah, that includes the masturbation chain. Tasha Cobbs. I don't know if that's what you meant when you rent it.
Is that?
When you wrote it. But the masturbation as a healthy exploration of sexual beings is not taught.
That's
the opposite is taught. I don't know how for women, when I was a kid, I didn't ever hear it directed towards the girls in the Bible study.
It wasn't.
It was just
another
boys
message,
don't do that.
Right? Another message that said, girls don't do that.
Yeah. Just silence. Boys don't do it. Girls, we're not even going to mention it.
Right,
so.
One way or the other.
My churchy experience was, if you did it, you could become demon-possessed.
Oh, demon wow. Possessed.
It wasn't that you grew warts on your hands, it's that you could get a demon.
It's a scare tactic.
That's a orgasm.
It was a serious scare tactic. So
yeah, that's a scare tactic. Demon.
That's right.
Woo! I don't think people in church, when I was growing up, I don't think they were having healthy sex.
It's normal. It's normal to masturbate.
You know what's funny? We had to talk about sex with our kids, and me and Melissa had to decide, what are we going to tell them about
this? We did.
Because there's what we were taught. There's what we now feel, but there's that feeling of like transition.
Yeah. From
your, you know, because mind you, we're 36. These thoughts are at most 2.5 years old. Mm-hmm. At most. I remember, I think we talked about this, I don't remember what episode. A pastor wrote or had a video series about masturbation, why it's healthy and sex, okay, and used scripture. And I showed it to Melissa, and we just like watched it, and then we're just like, nah, man.
Right.
That's crazy talk. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That was about 3 years ago. So we got 33 years of our life is this is wrong. It's hard to go to this is right. All we want to do for our kids is if we can just start them up with a healthy view from the beginning.
Right.
Of the whole purview of sex, STDs, children.
Right.
All, you know.
Pleasure.
Pleasure and all that. Hopefully they're not starting from the same place that we are starting from. But a lot of people, I know church people are like, ooh, masturbate, I can't touch that. That ain't even from my husband only. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you could, if it weren't supposed to be touched, why you can't tickle yourself?
Yeah.
But you can tickle yourself.
Yeah. And children, all children do it.
Yeah. And we pop little girls. Don't touch. Don't play with that.
Yeah. And they pop little boys too. Yeah.
But, they both pop me. Both are getting popped.
Like, play with my door stopper.
I can't. My question to you is, now that you are at a point where you're, you know, a confident woman in being a sexual pursuer, like what are the steps that you can maybe give to other women out there that are in this space and all they feel is the shame associated with that? I don't want to say title, but like kind of that role.
Well, right. I mean, if you do believe in God, I mean, you have a clitoris. That the only function of the clitoris is for orgasm and pleasure. So your very body tells you, the way you are put together, tells you that, you know, you are supposed to experience pleasure as a woman, that it's not just a man thing. It's a woman thing. I mean, it's men have their penis has a dual function. Mm-hmm. Our clitoris has only one function, which is for sex.
That's
great.
That
was great. So pleasure. So, I mean, I think you have to.
God was more generous to y'all.
He was. And we have multiple orgasms. I mean, we can have multiple orgasms.
In a night, different areas.
We can think orgasms.
Seriously. That's why 50 Shades of Grey sold so much.
I have a guy friend who says, man, if men could think orgasms, the world would stop. They'd all be just like, blink. Blink.
The IG Magini blink.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, we have incredible capacity. But I think that we're shut down because we don't surrender to our bodily pleasure. Mm-hmm.
You guys
we're
not Captain
taught
Marvel
to do that.
Before she had those shackles taken off her power. Mm-hmm. The powers were holding her back, and then they broke the shackles. She was like, oh, these are my powers.
This is my power.
That's your
my superpower.
Power.
That's right. Clitoral power. I love it.
We're best friends over here.
I know.
Loving this episode.
I know they are.
That's
too.
Right. That's right.
What was
I think, you know, also, I think body image is a huge part that really inhibits women. And, you know, they're so hung up. It's like, you know, they're on top. Oh, he can see my saggy breasts, or he can see the dimples on my thighs. Or, you know, I hear women so critical about their bodies that they cannot feel their bodies. Mm. They're just watching. They're watching with
that
criticism, and they're not inhabiting what they're feeling. So I got a little solution.
Go for it.
This is just a technique, but what I suggest, first of all, I mean, take a deep breath. Like, to truly learn how to meditate, that's helpful in terms of focus, but also squeeze your Kegel muscles. So, because it's very hard. It's very hard to squeeze your Kegel muscles without concentrating. Mm-hmm. And it's like it sucks your soul
it
into
sure
your body.
Does.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Listen, these Kegel
muscles. Sucks your soul right into your body.
Kegel muscles.
You know, so you come into your.
It centers you.
It centers you. Yeah.
I like it.
I feel your pelvis again.
Yeah, you do. I did it and immediately was like, I'm here.
You did it right now?
And it can feel good. We did it. We can do it without. Yep, we're doing it right now.
Everyone in the audience.
It's been enough
doing
episode. Everybody finna go to the house before the kids get out of school.
My other question, or something you kind of alluded to, and I just kind of want to come back to it, is one of the things that really kind of helped me in my own personal journey. What really was education. So even when you were just talking about the clitoris and the fact that it only has one sole function, I think starting to wipe your slate clean as far as what you've been told and what you've learned from your parents or society or what you've internalized or whatever. Educating yourself about your own body, I think, is one of the most empowering things you can do for yourself in any capacity, but specifically when you're talking about like your own sexual well-being, education is a very powerful tool.
Yeah, because I mean, we have childhood messages that are wrong. Mm-hmm. Childhood messages that tell us our genitals stink, mm-hmm. that we're dirty, all those things. So another quick trick that mm-hmm. I suggest, and this, my girlfriends tease me and they're like, you actually tell women to do this? I said, I do. So what I want women to do who like grow up thinking that somehow or another down there is bad and dirty, I'm like, okay, every time you go to the bathroom, I want you to smell your underwear, because you actually don't smell bad. They have conditioned themselves to say this smells bad. And eventually, of course, I'm going to want them to taste themselves. You know, because it's like,
what you talking, Dr. Watson? Taste himself?
Yes, yes.
Pure.
Because first of all, I think women are pretty tasteless. Usually, like after oral sex,
32 flavors.
A woman tastes herself with the bacteria from a man's mouth, and that tastes different than she tastes.
Hold it.
I got it.
Right?
I got lost.
So, okay, so women like say, you know, I don't ever want to taste myself after he's gone down on me. You know, because bacteria. Yeah, right.
Got it. Okay.
Mouth bacteria mingled, you know, that tastes different than what he's tasting.
Got it.
And so I want her to taste herself directly, you know, just to see.
What is the taste test for?
The taste test, because she's convinced that she doesn't taste good. Mm. And so I'm like, okay, is that really true? You like pretty tasteless.
Okay, so my mind's a little bit blown right now, but I'm going to tell you why.
Am I going too much?
I actually, some people don't like their boundaries to be like pressed. I actually do like my boundaries to be pressed because it just helps me grow. And I like to grow. So, but I'm going to tell you, so my hesitation in this is simply because I'm like, I don't know. But what I like about it is that you are right. Yeah. The fact of the matter is I have internalized ideas about what I smell like, what I taste like. I can't do this. I can't do that you know what I mean? So I have my own kind of things that I hold on to. So really a great way to like break through is to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I'm not mad at the work. It's doing the work. So I'm not mad at it, but I'm also just kind of like, I don't know. I'm scared.
This is my coochie.
I don't know.
And men, frankly, I think men should taste their semen.
Ho, ho, ho!
They need to know what
double
they taste.
Standard.
No, she didn't say taste your orgasm. She just said taste your V fluid.
She did say taste.
No, vaginal fluid. That's a V fluid.
Right. Taste their fluid. Too. Right? I mean, it's all.
What you
sexual?
Talking? I don't have enough, drink enough water for that. I've been having too much Dr. Pepper. I could probably taste like battery acid.
I want.
No, it doesn't. A little base.
I'm about to taste myself tonight.
She just talked about the pH scale.
Yeah.
It is.
Alkaline water. I really haven't been drinking no soda. I'd be heavy on the alkaline.
That's good.
I probably taste amazing. Alkaline semen probably tastes rich. I'll taste it if you taste it. We should taste each other.
I would smell. I'm actually not against smelling.
All about that.
I think smelling is totally fine. I think that's actually like, I would be down for that.
And women taste different like throughout their month.
I've heard that.
So sometimes it's like heavier, musky. Sometimes it's completely like odorless. Yeah. So it's all good though. As long as you don't have an infection, you're good.
I'm going to tell you what else is really great.
Girlfriend, you smell good.
I love that. I'm here for it. I'll tell you what else is really great. Having a great bra, because while you're tasting yourself, the least you can do is have perky boobs as well. So I want to tell you about Third Love. You guys know how I feel about Third Love. You guys are supporting Third Love. Every review I've ever gotten from a woman that's bought a Third Love bra has loved them. But I know you guys are supporting because they sent me all the other bras shot I bought. Okay, don't be twisted. But they did send me a new bra and I got the new one. I should have looked up the name. But it's the one that kind of has the V cut. So if you're wearing a low cut shirt, your bra doesn't poke through or peek through on your shirt, like through the low cutness. Okay. And I actually really like it. I have been wearing their bras nonstop. You guys know this. They have nude colors for all skin tones from the lightest to the darkest. What I actually really, really, really enjoy because diversity is a thing. And so I'm always happy for people that can represent from the low or from the very light to the very dark. They have over 80 bra sizes. They have their signature half sizes. You go online, you take their fit finders test. After you do it, they do a suggestion because like most of us are out here wearing the wrong size bra. That's why our shoulders hurt. That's why our backs hurt. That's why our bras are not high and lifted up. And these are the things that we need in our lives. Third Love knows that there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/lovehour right now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. In my last pictures that we just posted on Instagram, you guys were talking about my arms and how they are like Michelle Obama, Angela Bassett cut.
Yeah.
If you guys want these arms, I'm trying to tell you what you need to do, and that is join Open Fit. Going to the gym is hard. Don't nobody got time for that. We are busy, busy women. We got things to do and kids to pick up. So being able to roll out of bed, turn on the TV, and start working out from the convenience of your own home, in your living room, in as little as 10 minutes a day is the way to go for the busy modern woman. Sculpt your body in the convenience of your own home. No longer worry about others watching you work out or feel the pressure to keep up with your peers at the gym. OpenFit brings the gym to you and is great for all fitness levels. OpenFit has changed the way we work out. Kevin works out and you can join right now by texting my code love to 50 50 50. You can join us on our fitness journey personalized just for you. Right now during the Open Fit 14-day challenge, my listeners get a special extended 14-day free trial membership to Open Fit when you text love, that's love, to 50 50 50. You will get full access to Open Fit, all the workout and nutrition information totally free. Again, just text love.
Bless you. Excuse me.
You're welcome. Or yes, bless you. I was going to say you're welcome. Again, just text love. That's L-O-V-E to 50 50 50. Standard message and data rates may apply. All right. So after you've completed the taste test, which I don't think this is a bad idea.
Are you willing to do it?
Yeah, I don't know about all that. Being able to say it's not a bad idea and Melissa do it. Are you really going to do it?
Absolutely. You know what? I thought I was freaking. You said that. I was like, oh, Dr. Watson, I'm hideous. but I'm all about it. I don't know what's going on.
I mean,
it
creates flexibility, right? Because then you can have oral sex at different times after you've had intercourse. Then the guy's not freaked out by tasting himself.
Oh, I got you.
You can kiss after, you know, he's gone down on her and she's not freaked out. I mean, it's good.
It's a lot of
flexibility.
I think what you're saying is it's a lot of
get out of your head.
It's in your head. There's a fear.
Sex smells. I mean, it is reinterpreting that as sexual instead of stinky or bad. I mean, I think we've just heard these messages that are wrong.
Yeah.
And so our brain associates the smell that is natural with bad and stinky or, you know.
That is a good point. That's great. So clean becomes clean. Your natural state is not clean enough for sex.
Right. I don't like it when my husband uses mouthwash before we have sex. I mean, I want to taste him. I don't want to. I hate it. Like after dinner, I'd rather taste wine on his breath than, you know, mouthwash.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, get in.
Although maybe after the gym, the shower is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wait, you should tell us certain things.
Okay,
gave us a tip before we started about after the gym. Great sex happens after the 30 minutes after
Yes.
Okay, before say it again.
So after exercise, basically that 30-minute window, you are more easily aroused. Your body is basically warmed up, right? It's revved up. And so everything works better.
I'm learning a lot. I didn't think I was going to learn this much from this episode because I'm not the target person, target market for this as a higher desire woman. Yeah. I'm not a higher desire woman, but I'm learning a lot. I am higher desire, though.
But higher
sexual
desire.
Pursuer. Sexual pursuer. And Dr. Yes. Lori has all the tips.
I never have been pushed in the love hour beyond my comfort zone.
Really?
No.
Until you said, Tayshia, no. I'm always like, yeah, let's do that. You said, Tayshia, so I was like, whoa.
Whoa.
Let's pump the brakes. taste myself? No. Yes. Kombucha, yes. Girl.
Kombucha's not good. Okay, right. So one of the things that I think people have
to... I'm so looking forward to coming see you.
Oh, I'm gonna hit
in
you.
North Carolina.
Yeah. Oh, the show's going to be great. You know what's great about this? This year's tour is called Slightly Problematic. I get to do marriage jokes and jokes that I cannot do at churches.
Yes.
So it is my personal favorite set so far.
Oh, sure.
Because I have the shackles. Now, sometimes my audience is like, oh my gosh, Kev. But it's only if they haven't been watching The Love Hour. Uh-huh. If you watch The Love Hour, there's nothing I say on stage.
Right.
Matter of fact, the stage version of me is not even as crazy as The Love Hour.
Really?
The Love Hour and Dear Kev are way more risque than I can even be on stage.
Yeah, so Kev be out of pocket.
I'll be out of pocket. So, but usually I'm really churchy on stage. And I will be, but there's some marriage jokes in there that it reminds me of when I first started stand-up and I wasn't like a Christian comedian. I was just another guy. Mm-hmm. So there was no expectations of what I could or couldn't do.
Yeah,
right.
And that's why this year's set is my personal fave.
Fun.
Oh, yeah. Talk about sex, strippers, it's a whole thing.
One of the things that you talked about and I thought was kind of key, and I think maybe we should hit on it again, is the journey that you and your husband went through to get mm-hmm. to a place where you are now. Mm-hmm. What advice or tips maybe that you can offer to, you know, a woman that's in the scenario right now,
she feels like
she's at her wit's end.
Her husband is now. Before you answer, one thing I thought was interesting is that relationship with your husband caused stress on both sides.
It did.
You were stressed because you felt deprived and angry, mm-hmm. and he was stressed because he felt like you were asking
suffocated
of him something.
And rejected, yeah. and not good enough.
You guys are both doing this, and I never thought of it affecting both parties equally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because Melissa's lower desire and I'm higher desire, it makes perfect sense from my point of view, you know, because mm-hmm. I ask or whatever, but I never thought of in the reverse, it still ends up having the same issue. I'm sorry, go ahead. I just thought that was interesting.
So we've been married 34 years. Wow. How old are y'all?
We're 36.
Yeah.
I don't know why I want to be 37 so bad.
So we've been married a long time. And, you know, a lot of it is, first of all, I remember getting a hold of the fact that what I was doing wasn't working. You know, just like, okay, this was before
that's
I understood attachment theory. I knew what he was doing wasn't working.
Right.
I was quite certain, you know,
that he was wrong.
But I couldn't really see myself. And then, you know, kind of when we came to the brink, and then I thought, okay, I need to do something different.
Yeah.
So a lot of it became how I spoke about it, which is really more from vulnerability than from criticism. You know, talking about my need, like, you know, I want to be in a marriage that is really sexual. I mean, this is how I experience love. This is how I experience acceptance. This is pleasure to me. I want to serve and pleasure you, and I want it in reverse. And so talking about it from
cowgirl
a more
reverse
gentle,
or just, oh,
absolutely.
Cowgirl, man. That is, hey, top three and ain't number three. Yeah,
top three and ain't number three. Love it. So, yeah, I think part of it as a pursuer is we need to talk with language that is soft and with some awareness about that our partner's biggest fear is about being rejected. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and withdrawers, right? Distancers, they are uber sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, they just are uber, uber sensitive. And so you can say one little thing and I can see my husband's face just go blank. Mm-hmm. Even now, I mean, I'm like, wait, come back to me. Did you think I was criticizing you? And I think that his anxiety, too, about needing, like I needed to get hypersensitive to that. So I remember, and this was fairly recently, probably in the last 5 years, he came into the house and he said, honey, are you tired? And I was like, yeah, I'm a little tired. And then it dawns on me about a half an hour later, wait, were you like asking if I was up for sex?
Yes.
And he was. Because
and that is that.
You know, because he was anxious about what if he had to ask directly and I was going
to
say no. The sense of rejection was so
key. He's trying to get the obstacles out of the way.
Right.
If you say you're tired, then I'm just not going to ask.
I'm not going to ask.
But
I was like, no.
I ain't that tired. I ain't never that tired.
If you need sex, honey, if you want sex, I got it, you know?
I got it, bro.
I've definitely done a soft ass like that.
Yeah. So I think part of, and then I think withdrawers.
What have you ever been a soft ass?
Let
her talk.
No, I need to know because I'm missing opportunities.
Yeah, no. Here, let's do it right here. Okay, we'll be in the
couples
room.
Therapy.
Couples therapy.
You know what? I think I know one. Can I share what
Dr. Lori
I think?
Does intensives.
Let's so do intensives. Like, right. Let's go to Raleigh. Yeah, what are you doing tomorrow? But hey, can I share one?
12-hour intensives.
Okay, what?
Okay, this is what I think one is.
Okay.
Do you want to take a shower?
Oh, if it's at night, yes. Because I do have a fear of stinking.
Okay, so a lot of time, so Melissa's, we got to work on her, doctor. Yes. Recalibrating that mind. But you know what? This is not her. And when I was a kid, that's, girl, you stink. It smelled like fish in here. Like that was just all out in the hallway. Uh-huh. So I see how we permeated that. We as a culture permeated that. You're just trying to be funny or whatever. So Melissa, sometimes her soft, because if we don't take a shower, the chances are very minimal. So instead of saying, hey, do you want some butt? She said, hey, do you want to take a shower? Because last night was an example. I was tired, right? I said, I'm going to bed. She's like, are you showering first? I was like, absolutely, I am.
I'm not that tired.
I'm not that tired. And I'm talking about, I woke up at 3 a.m. from Oakland, came here and shot for like 8 hours. I was exhausted. But understanding what she's really saying, we've actually never had this conversation out loud.
I'm realizing it now.
Yeah, because this is why I like the Love Hour as a listener. A lot of times you're doing stuff that you don't realize is classified as something.
Right.
This is what I know what she's saying. Or I'm asking her, do you want to take a shower? And she'll be like, I'm just going to get in bed. I'm like, well, hey, I ain't taking no shower either. You know what I mean? So I think understanding what the subtext of your relationship is so important, because we're humans. Like in movies and writing, they teach you writing about subtext. People very rarely come out and ask straightforward questions.
That's right. And even pursuers who are critical.
I'm a pursuer.
They're not necessarily saying it from a vulnerable heart.
Right.
They're saying, you know, you don't give it to me enough. You don't seem to always be up for it. Versus, you know what? This is the way I get fed. This is the way I feel the deepest connection.
Yeah.
That's vulnerability. It's
absolutely.
Like, and I mean,
that just
talking about
sound
it.
Sexy. That's why it's hard to say.
But
like,
wait, can we like land on this a little bit? One of the things that I've actually talked about in the Love Hour when we've done it live, and you're talking about it now, and I think it's so important, is to talk about the deeper meaning of sex with your partner beyond just the physical act. Mm-hmm. Because as a sexual distancer, sexual distancers, what can happen is you feel like your body is just there to satisfy a need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a
that's
blender.
Physical. Okay. Yep. And so understanding the emotional aspect of it, I think, is really important. And so giving sexual high desire people, sexual pursuers, that language to articulate what's going on below this physical need, I think is really important.
Yeah.
Because you can forget.
I don't think they know.
I think that particularly for males in our culture, right, they are socialized. We allow men one path to be vulnerable.
Yes.
And that's sexually. We don't allow them much language to talk about their needs, to talk about their need for touch. Mm-mm. In many ways. Like, I want to be held. I need skin on skin.
We can't even be the little spoon
need you to
in the
stroke
relationship.
Me.
We
right,
always
no.
have to be the big spoon.
Yeah.
I want to be cuddled. I want to be like this. And I want to tuck in.
Yeah. I get it. I totally get it. I love that.
Hold me sometimes. I had a rough day.
Right. But I also think for sexual distancers that it's not always about not having desire. It's that sometimes desire and the experience of sex is so intense that they're managing that intensity for themselves by trying to make sure that it's the right time, the right place, that they're in the right mood, because it's almost like it overwhelms them.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
You know, so I think sometimes it's a little different. And I think respecting that and then also, like you were saying, that the low desire person perhaps realizing that it's not just about I want it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also I want you.
Right.
And that to me is, I think, the best ask.
That's
it's not,
a different ask.
Hey, you want sex, but hey, I want you. It's personal. It's vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's
you can
not
feel
like,
separated from the act.
Yeah.
I want it, the act of sex. Mm-hmm. I can see myself hearing like, hey, do you want to have sex? Like that is a different
and
piece of
like,
something.
And then it's like, no.
Yes. Right? Because that's like, do you want a burger? Like, no,
right.
Not really.
Yeah, I'm not
like,
in
but
the mood.
No, I would like
I want you.
You. Oh, well, me.
Right.
You know, like, do you want to eat versus do you want to eat Chick-fil-A? Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I would like to eat that. You know what I mean? And I never even thought about that myself, of like your mind can separate that act from the person. And therefore, the person hearing that information can feel like this is a thing I can give you, but it's, you're not asking of me. You don't want me, the person.
Right, exactly.
Can I say something?
And so it's more risky to say it that way.
Yes.
And people respond to it. People.
Okay, I would like to say something on the behalf of the sexual distancers.
Yes, ma'am.
Because also I could interpret I want you as pressure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Like I that felt really pressure good. With that. And so that could, that's scary now you're saying, and
no,
anxiety.
I don't want me.
Yes. And I so don't that's want a you. Lot of like anxiety inducing experience. So I, this is just
that's
me, myself personally.
Yeah. No, that
I think,
is good feedback.
I think one thing that you said, I don't know, and this was just my experience in this moment. I got hot. Uh-huh. Like I felt myself like, I don't know if I want. Yeah, you got too much dip. So one of the things that
like
I
you got
felt,
hot, like sexually hot, or you just got, you felt a flush,
anxiety,
like anxiety hot.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So when you feel that, where do you feel that?
Where do you mean where?
In
my heart
body.
Up.
In your heart up.
Yeah.
Okay. You feel hot in your heart up.
Like
okay.
I'm sweating right now.
Uh-huh.
I need my other deodorant.
So it's like, okay, so you feel this like flush, like there's pressure.
Yes.
I'm anxious.
Yes.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you said earlier that I don't know, I responded to a little bit better, and the word you used was softer, and I was like, that does feel softer, was like the interpretation of love. And maybe just because, I don't know, maybe I was just like, oh, that sounds sweet to me. I don't know. But that felt less pressure inducing to me than feeling like I want you.
You know what's good about this?
Okay.
This is why I like the Love Hour.
Mm-hmm. What Tell us why you like your own show.
It's a great show. You are giving advice, right? In general, this works for you or for clients and things. But what Melissa's hearing is that phrasing doesn't work for me.
That's
but
right.
But here's what phrasing does work for me. And that's what I want the listeners to get. Like,
it's good
not
communication,
a verbatim.
Right?
Yeah, because that's good information, but then you have to apply it to my relationship. Do you, my wife, does this question, does it elicit a response?
For you?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too, as a pursuer, you know, we need to take no. And withdrawers need to be able to
take
say no. You know, they need to be able to say, no, I'm not interested right now.
Oh, without us getting
and
to
it
like
can't
a huff
and a puff. Right.
Yeah.
It can't be like utter rejection. We have to understand, you know, the separateness of our partner, the differentness. And it's like, okay, I may be in the mood when you are not in the mood. And that is not a personal rejection.
Right.
You know, and I think that once there's clarity and once there's freedom, I always say that for sexual withdrawers, that the road to yes is through no. You have to feel like you can say no in order and not have a big blow up in order to have yourself free to come forward.
Major key.
Major key.
Major, major key. I think that that was so
that was good.
Because if I always feel like pressure, it's just honestly, it's just easier to say no. But if I
right, because you're getting yourself space that
yes,
way.
Yes, yes. But if I feel like no is safe, it's so much easier to like,
I'm gonna tell you what the pursuer's issue with that is, not the no. It's that we decide no for you sometimes, and we feel like we don't get credit for that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, yeah, you probably look tired. I'm not even gonna ask tonight.
Yeah, like the 500 times we didn't ask.
There's
right?
so many times I didn't ask. So when I finally gather the courage to ask, and you say no, it's like,
yeah.
Well, dang. You know what I mean?
So I didn't ask you the last three nights because I knew you were tired. I didn't get any credit for that.
That's how it's so weird to hear a woman say the stuff I say in my own head.
Oh, no. I think it. I really think it.
I
kind of do say sometimes, like, maybe I'm just half boy or something because I really do live in many ways in more of a male experience, I think, in terms of desire and all of that.
Yeah.
And the difficulty with getting a no. Yep. Yep.
I love that we're able to bring this perspective on the show because it's just not something that
I
could speak to.
I appreciate you for waiting to get the right person.
Oh, it was so important to me
to
get the right person.
I was like, you ain't done hard desire. She was like, I haven't found the person.
It was important to me to find. The reason why is because, number one, you live this in real life.
Yeah,
and so it's so much more than just the words on the page.
Yeah.
This is something that you've experienced before the research and like the education piece and now afterward. And you're just able to articulate it with that kind of knowledge. And again, part of the reason why I said it earlier about the education piece, the reason why I say it's so empowering is because I've learned so much through educating myself. Like, that is the biggest piece of transformation for me, is simply wiping my slate clean with everything that I was taught beforehand, and like inputting new information. Yeah. That has been like the biggest thing. The other thing that's really important to educate yourself on is wine, because the last thing you want to do is go to dinner and order Moscato during dinner. Although, listen, do what you want to do, though, also.
They just look at you crazy.
Yes, plus dessert. Also.
Or they tell you no in Rome.
So we went to Rome and ordered Moscato, and the lady was literally like, oh, dear heart.
No. She felt the safeness and comfort to tell you no.
I don't think she cared. And we felt like, oh, okay. But she brought us a bomb red wine, and it expanded our palate, and we were able to experience something new and different that we wouldn't have experienced otherwise. It's one thing that I love about First Leaf, is that it allows you to try different wines, things you might not think that you like, you get to try. And listen, Valentine's Day is coming up. There is nothing wrong with having an at-home little situation. Pour yourself a nice glass of wine, set up the little, have your kids go to their friend's house and have a little nice romantic dinner at the house. And sometimes those are the best, because you go to restaurants and it's crowded and it's loud. And for especially whatever reason, they think the music should be at 500 decibels so you can't even have a conversation, which I never understand. But that's another note. We're coming back to First Leaf. I got started by taking the First Leaf wine quiz to assess my exact wine drinking preferences. First Leaf then created an introductory 6-pack of wine, custom tailored just for me, for only $29.95. That is a 6-pack of wine for only $29.95. Seriously, this is an amazing deal. When my wines arrived, I tasted and rated them online. First Leaf took my ratings and selected unique wines based on my taste for my next shipment. The First Leaf Wine Club today. Nope. One more time. Try First Leaf Wine Club today, where buying great wine is simple. Sign up with my link and you'll get an exclusive intro offer, 6 bottles of wine for only $29.95 plus free shipping. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/love. That's 6 bottles of wine for only $29.95 plus free shipping at tryfirstleaf.com/love. 6 bottles of wine, $29.95. tryfirstleaf.com/love.
Love.
Okay.
Great for Valentine's Day.
It is fantastic for Valentine's Day. And I actually want to, before we go into.
It's just the engineers.
Man, they're doing a lot.
Everybody thought it was an earthquake every time.
Before we go into the questions that we received, and we'll answer a few of them, I did want you to offer your date night advice for sex. Because how many of us go out on a date and like at the end of the night, we're about to have a night and it's going to have a good time, and you get home and you are tired? Or you are just not in the mood anymore or whatever, because you start thinking about the next day and like, child, all the things start happening. So what is your piece of advice that you offer for?
So I think people should play first. They should get rid of the kids, you know, like have the babysitter take them to pizza or something, and have wine and appetizers first in your home.
Oh,
go upstairs, get ready, foreplay.
Foreplay before the day?
Foreplay before the game.
Really?
Yeah, and then y'all fruition. Make love.
No, go for
and
it.
And then you go out to dinner. Because first of all, a lot of women...
Dr. Watson, you're moving on. You're saying have sex before the date?
Yes.
Full sex?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I never thought about
because
that.
Because you have energy. You had a little bit of food, a little bit of wine. So, you know, it feels good. You're not too full. You're not too drunk. You're not too tired. Because if you go out and you have dinner and wine and all that, you come home and you're exhausted and somebody be angry in the morning.
Dude.
Right?
That is such a practical, good piece of advice.
Right.
Because even me as a sexual pursuer, after date night, I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm not too tired, but I am tired. But you feel very different at 6 than you do at 11.
Right. That's right.
You know what
I mean?
Right. Like,
and you have energy at 6.
Man, what happens when your kids move away?
It's
there's so,
so
much
great.
Of it. Of
wait,
ruining
so
that
great. I got the empty nest. It is so great.
I mean, they're like running away from us more and more every day. But when they don't live with you, 13. You can have sex at 3:17.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But no, I really think, you know, it's a better time of the night to do it. And then especially women, I think physiologically, we often wake up after sex. Mm-hmm. And if your partner goes to sleep after sex, there's this disconnect. Whereas this way, you make love, you go out, and you have that sense of closeness all night long. Man. You know, you're kind of mushy-gushy, you know, and you feel that. And so, and then you come home, and you can go right to sleep because there's no pressure. There's, you know, it's great.
I'm going to tell you actually why I love this idea. It's because low-key morning sex is better than evening sex. I said it. You can at me if you want to. And the reason why is because you're waking up instead of going to sleep. Yes.
That's right. That's right.
And the thing that sucks is, again, the kids.
I'm so serious.
You got to take them to school. What if they wake up? And then they remain toothbrushes. Now they're in the room. They see their mom doing something they never seen their mom do before. And now it's weird. Or you're like, what if the kids wake up? There's a time pressure. So 6 o'clock is the best time, is what you're
saying. 6 o'clock. 6 to 7.
In the morning.
Late reservation. In the morning.
No, you could do it at night too. Yeah, but morning is where it's at. All I'm saying is morning is where it's at. Okay, don't at me. Yeah. Or at me.
I ain't
me.
Going to the gym no more. Because I'll be going to the gym in the morning. That'd be messing up my sets.
I think it's fantastic.
I'm about to be 388 pounds full of life.
That's the only thing is that.
But feeling good.
But
feeling
you have
good.
So many things.
But you know what? You know what? This is my theory about that.
What is it?
The more sex you have sensual pleasure, so you don't need as much sensual pleasure with food. That's my theory.
Because you're eating coochie all the time. You don't have to worry about eating burgers.
That's
I'm
right,
full
baby.
On coochie, you understand?
That's right.
You taste great, girl.
Okay, so let's go through. We probably have 15 or 20 minutes, and okay. We did receive some really great questions. This
good.
Has been
from
so
our
great.
Patreon.
And from the Boo Hive, actually. So we're going to, I will answer questions direct from the Patreon as well. But one of the questions we have is. Okay, this is a great one. We kind of discussed it, but maybe you can like wrap it up in like a nice couple sentences. How do you deal with the stigma around being high desire and ensuring your spouse doesn't feel bad for being a low desire man?
Yeah, that's good because, I mean, again, not something that I would have talked about. I do have his permission now to talk about it on air, obviously. You know, because I think being a man is to be sexual, right?
Yeah.
And I think my husband was sexual. It was the action difference,
yep.
Right? It was coming toward me that created such a sense of like claustrophobia and intimacy mm-hmm. problems, essentially, that was what was difficult. It wasn't that he didn't feel innately sexual. It's different. But I think it's with respect. I mean, I'm in a monogamous relationship, and for me, his feelings, the respect that I have for him, I think it's how you talk about it. You know, you can say, you know, my man, you know, never gives it to me. You know, he's this, that, or the other thing. But that's, I guess, to me, I only tell people, especially in my private life, that I would have wanted to get help from. Not just anybody.
Right.
I mean, shaming your partner. I mean, what kind of behavior is that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I
that's
mean,
not
anybody
get
who
you
does
where
that,
you want.
That is not going to get you sex. That's going to get you right out of the marriage.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely.
Because I would never put up with that, and yeah. I would never want anybody that I was with to put up with that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I love that you said one of your biggest like aha moments was your own revelation that what not just what he was doing wasn't working, but that what you were doing wasn't working, and trying to learn to come from a place of empathy and with love. And so you come together and you have this softer conversation about this is how I experience love. This is how, like, I don't know. Those words wrap me in a hug. Like mm-hmm. that's what I feel when I hear those words. And maybe that's a different conversation than talking about like your need for sex.
Yeah.
Cause that just feels like,
or
well,
my
child,
right
more
to
than
sex.
That.
I mean, there's
or
a lot
my
of people,
right.
Right. In Christendom.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, there's a whole lot of, you got to give it to
submit.
Me. You owe it to me. All of that is crap in terms of, you know, having your partner really want to come towards you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because what we want is our partner to come toward us
yep.
with a heart, you know, to give to us, to be with us. You know, obligatory sex,
trash.
You know, duty sex, forget
big
it.
Trash.
You know, we don't want that.
You
nobody
feel like
wants
a chore
that.
On the list of chores.
Yeah.
I got vacuum, mop,
so good.
Dishes, sex, clean the refrigerator out.
Yeah.
You're not even the last chore. I got something to do after this. So let's
right.
just wrap it up.
That's great.
Oh yeah, that I got something to do later. That that one, that's a killer.
Stings.
Yeah,
that stings.
So good. Do men often feel intimidated, or do you think men often feel intimidated by a high desire woman?
Well, you know, I was churchy when I got married, so I don't know if men felt intimidated or not, because I wasn't doing that. You know, I mean, I do have people that interview me and they say, just think if you were dating again, you know, people would be so intimidated by you because you're a sex therapist. And it's like, I think for me, being a sex therapist is about, you know, certainly knowing something, but it isn't about criticism or a standard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for my husband and I, he always laughs. He's like, are you trying something new on me? You know, are you doing something new to me? You know, but it's a joke. Yeah. I mean, and we just have fun with it. I think good sex is about attunement. Yeah. Good sex is about being with a partner and really being deeply connected. And that's what the research says, too. It's not just me. It's optimal sex is basically when you can move with your partner, feel your partner, like your hearts are sinking. That's great sex. So it's not about a performance.
That is Dr. So Emily said that, too.
100% true.
Emily not, said that, too.
Yeah, she did say that. And it's nearly impossible to have good sex if you don't feel close in your relationship. The set, you can have the performative act, but it doesn't feel as close or as fulfilling.
Yes. I also think, though, sex is a path. It also makes us feel, you know,
absolutely
close.
100%.
I mean, sometimes I think as a low desire person.
Oh, say
right,
it again.
You know,
say it again.
I mean, sometimes. It's like, I get it. I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. I want to feel safe emotionally before I have sex. But every once in a while, creating emotional safety through sex is powerful, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't always have to wait for that moment. I, you know, women tell me every day of the week, you know, but I can't have sex unless I feel close to him. And I'm like, really? I get that. But every single time, can't sometimes you feel like, you know, you want to give and you know your partner, usually male, is going to feel safer afterwards. His heart's going to open up. His mouth is going to open up because he's going to talk afterwards.
To talk.
Right? I mean, I think they'll have to talk. That's what I was talking about.
But I like where you're going there. I actually came to that realization a while ago.
I think that is
so key. And that was very powerful. I think might have been like 3 years ago, I think. 2 or 3 years ago when she realized that.
Tell me what I thought. When
you talk about this where she was like, I felt like elitist. Like, I don't need sex in the relationship. But therefore, I am better. You remember this? We talked about
this
before.
Yeah.
Then when you understood how I processed that, and like, what if I just felt like I don't have to talk to you because talking is not important to me. Communicating is not important. Do I feel, and what if I was like, I feel better. I'm an elitist because I don't need to communicate with you. How would you feel if I just was withholding communication from
you?
You know what I mean? And that was like a revelation for her. Like, oh no, like, this is the way I feel love when we have close communication. Well, this is the way he feels love when we have sex.
Intimate.
And the more sex we have, the more I open up. Because after you have sex, you'll be like, girl, I love you. I want to talk to you. I want to hold you. What do you think about our future? You know what I mean? Because you are like openly, you know what I mean? Like,
Like you.
So sometimes for men, when we don't get that, when we're higher desire, you end up being like, well, I don't want to talk about nothing then.
Yeah.
I don't want to, I don't feel close. Since we're not having sex, I don't want to open up, talk about my hopes and dreams. I'm not going to be, if I can't be vulnerable with you
and
have sex,
and
I don't
risks,
want to talk.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know after sex to me is like this sweet afterglow where I'm just wide open, willing to admit my faults, willing to do anything.
You know what? I did eat your leftovers. I didn't want to say nothing about it, but I feel so close to you now. But they was just in there.
Okay, what we got?
People are saying they want you to do an After Dark episode. That would probably
what is that?
Be really
oh, Love
good.
Our After
what
Dark is what
is
we have
After
on our
Dark?
Patreon, Kevin Stage Studios, which is rocking right now. We have a great community in there. I think you'd be great for Love Our
I
After
do
Dark.
Too. I should totally schedule one with you afterward. Yeah. We can talk about it afterward.
It's just where we can go a little further, a little deeper.
Yeah.
You understand?
A little more
balls
explicit.
Deep, if you will. A little more explicit.
Yeah, a little bit more explicit.
And it allows us to answer more questions. Because we have more time.
Yeah.
That's actually a really great idea. Okay, I'll do like one or two more. This one is a big one. How do you deal with the rejection? We kind of talked about this, but I guess I'll ask. How do you deal with the rejection that can come with being a high desire partner? Is it, it is easy to interpret that as your spouse not being attracted to you, or you're not doing something right. Some especially when you fall into the framework that men want sex, but yours doesn't.
Oh, yeah. that's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, frankly, I struggled with that for many years, mm-hmm. thinking, okay, what's wrong with me? I'm too fat. I'm too this, you know, whatever. I think as I became more of a secure person, I did my own work, you know, and did my own work in therapy. Don't ever trust a therapist who hadn't gone to therapy. That's crazy. Yeah. You know,
major key.
Yeah, really. You should go to therapy. you gotta do your own work so you can separate your stuff from your patient's stuff. But I think that, like what I talked about, I didn't come from a childhood where I had secure attachment. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of subject to all kinds of things in my relationships, not just my marriage, but in all my relationships. Yeah. And so I think as I became more secure, I began to think, okay, this isn't all about me. This is also about his stuff and his difficulties. And that separateness really helped me. I will say my third baby, too, helped me. I was, like, in the worst shape of my life. But I had a natural childbirth, and I'm not about that necessarily. But it was a very powerful experience for me, and I had renewed respect for my body, you know. And strength training, it's like I feel like I have respect for my body. And so I think part of that helped. It's like, okay, it's not just about the body. It's about something in the space between us. And, you know, fortunately, my husband did his own work, and we were able to talk about that. I think it, probably more than anything in the world, that kind of therapy where you investigate your internal beliefs, like what you tell yourself, that really becomes helpful in terms of dealing with that rejection. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about me.
I want to actually do a podcast episode called The Space Between Us. And you just said
yes,
that.
Yes. And, because sex is between us. Mm-hmm. Sex is not just in one body. It isn't in the low desire person or in the high desire person. Desire is shared. It's how we relate. Mm-hmm. You know, even people like good. Who do, you know, I have treat all kinds of stuff, but like vaginismus, which is mm-hmm. the woman's vagina shuts down and cannot allow penetration. And you think, well, clearly it's her problem, right? Yeah. But when I treat the couple, as soon as I get her able to allow penetration, then he becomes impotent. He gets ED. It is crazy, but sex is between us.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That was good.
Be good indeed.
Okay. Last question from this. Joshua, how much time do we have?
We are muted.
We just started. Come on, you guys.
Okay.
We got lots of questions.
I know we do. So, well, last question on this, and then I'll go to the live questions. How can you or do you ever find fulfillment with having just one partner as a high desire person?
I just want to say I get this Dear Kev question all the time from higher desire women. Uh-huh. I never answer because I don't know how to make a joke of it. And it seems too serious to make fun of. But it's like, my husband won't have sex with me. I don't know what to do. Should I just get a side dude? I get that question all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, I think some people do that. My commitment is to monogamy. So that's my lifestyle choice. I think there are certainly people who open up their marriages and do that. I think integrity demands that you talk about it and decide together. You know,
I like that. Integrity demands.
So. You know, so
that's a good way to say what my personal beliefs are, but that might not be your relationship thing.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell anybody how they ought to manage their lives. I would say that, you know, if you don't do it with integrity, you're going to destroy relationships.
Yeah. Even people who have open relationships can still feel that the parameters of their open relationship were violated.
Absolutely.
And it feels the same as cheating.
And the thing about open relationships, so this is my bias, but, you know, it's complicated. Like my husband says, God, one woman is just plenty enough of a complication.
I don't know how people do it. Multiple
it's like because we're talking about sexual pursuit and emotional pursuit and withdrawal. And on multiple fronts, it's like, man, you're keeping a lot of balls in the air there, so to speak.
You're going to keep balls in your mouth. You can't fit them all. You're trying to catch them in the air.
That's
balls
a lot.
In your mouth.
Right.
Balls everywhere.
Exactly.
Okay, this is a live question. What potential issues do you see when both people are high desire and sexual pursuers?
Nothing.
I was about to say.
That'd be great. Are you kidding? That's the fantasy of every sexual pursuer is to
want to play sexual. That doesn't happen often, does it?
It really doesn't, because something happens in between us, even in securely attached people who find each other. One is slightly more distant than the other in some way. So, right. I mean, I, you know, I... I think when we're first together with a partner, oftentimes it just feels very fluid, mm-hmm. you know, that we are, you know, absolutely in bed all the time. But then, you know, you got to go to work and raise children and, you know, get up. And I mean, so there's difficulties that happen in a longer relationship that impact that. But I think that's the fantasy. You know, I do. I will say, though, I do know people who have a lot of sex. And sex is not where they fight out this power struggle. I see one couple, and they literally have sex and have for 20 years twice a day. Oh, wow. They wake up that every day. They wake up that way, and they go to bed that day. I'm like, man, that's amazing. But they just, they're both made that way. But they've got other issues. I mean, we're going to fight out sort of the issues of pursuit and distance somewhere. But they don't do it on the sexual field.
Okay, this question is, does sexual trauma have a greater effect on low desire on a low desire person? I will say this for that question. I think on the 20th, which might be next week actually, I am going to be talking to a trauma specialist. I don't know if that's the right word. About how sexual trauma impacts romantic relationships. So stay tuned to that. That's going to be a great episode.
Good. And you need to do a whole segment on that. So, you know, it depends on when the sexual trauma happens. And sexual trauma, you know, if you've been traumatized in childhood, you can hardly come out of childhood with that without being insecurely attached. So, you know, when we're young and we're violated, right? I mean, it's going to change our experience of life forever until we get healing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do believe there is healing and you can be fully recovered. But let's say you have a good childhood and a stranger, God forbid, rapes you. And everybody around you says it wasn't your fault. And you're handled sensitively by the police. Do police handle anybody sensitively? You know, it's like some of them do, you know, but there's like, you know, support for you. You may come out of that and be able to recover much more quickly.
Yeah.
So I think some of it is the age, and it depends on your existing attachment style. You know, if you get violated in, let's say, in college, date raped or something, and you've come out of a background that says, you know, basically, you know, my father was erratic, he was an alcoholic, you know, mom was mousy, never protected me. I mean, you're not going to be able to fully enter sexuality.
Yeah,
that makes sense. But I can hardly wait to hear what's happening next week, because I would say really important, very healable, you can be well, you can then again, you know, have sexuality as a gift to you. So do that.
Have sexuality as a gift back to you. That was good.
Yeah, back to yourself.
Very good.
Yeah, that was good. Okay, do we have any other questions here? Kevin, do you have any questions?
No. I'm tasting tonight.
Are you really going
to taste test?
Absolutely.
The taste test tonight.
I can't be the ridiculous person and then not match my own ridiculousness.
That's right.
And I'm even going to say it's easy. I'll update you guys on the Love After Dark.
That's right.
Can't be talking about tasting myself, actually doing it and talking about it publicly.
That's good.
But LHAD, oh, you'll know about the taste test. Oh, yeah.
I think that's it. Did you have anything you wanted to share? I'm trying to see if there's questions come. Oh, whoa, hold on.
But also, Liz, Doughboy has to go somewhere. So okay. we have to respect his time.
Okay, there's nothing there. There was like a ton of updates, but I think that was it. Did you have anything that you wanted to share with our, like maybe something we didn't cover?
No, I mean, I think this is fantastic. I think you guys are doing a good work.
Thank you.
In terms of, you know, helping people talk about subjects that, especially if we grew up the way we grew up, mm-hmm. you know, there's repression and difficulty. And so I'm grateful for you. I really am.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Melissa does all the work.
Thank you.
I just be coming up and talking crazy. She does all the pre-work. I'm late. She does all the pre-work. She books the guests. I come on like, who are you talking to? Oh, Higher Desire. On the way here, I was like, oh, snap. And then I just come here and say ridiculous stuff.
Yeah,
hilarious. Well, for anyone who is interested in following you, finding you, can you provide them with your socials and the podcast?
Sure. Okay. So the podcast, Foreplay Radio, Sex and Couples Therapy on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And you can find me anywhere podcasts are, definitely. Awaken Love and Sex is my direct website. And we're on all the social medias. So Foreplay Radio, basically on Facebook and Twitter and Insta. Yeah.
And if you're interested in following the podcast, they are actually tagged on my Instagram.
Thank you.
As well. And I'll share it on my personal Miss Kev on Stage page as well. But she's tagged as of today, which is Tuesday. So by the time this comes out on Thursday, you'll be able to find her information as well. I think that is it. In the meantime, between time, stay tuned. February is going to be a great month for the Love Hour Conference. I will be doing the giveaway this month. We still have tickets available. They will be on sale this month. And then I also have something else very special that I'm going to do for just one day. And that probably gave you an idea of what it is. It'll be for 24 hours. One day we are doing something very special. So stay tuned to that. If you're interested in attending the Love Hour Conference, make sure you stay tuned for that. TheLoveHour.com for tickets. Again, that information is available right now. And I think that is it. Kevin?
Goodbye.
Me? Thank you guys so much for joining us today. Thank you, Dr. Lorianne Watson. Every time I say your name, I hear your intro. Couple sex therapy, author of something.
Wanting sex again.
Wanting sex again. Yeah, I hear it in my head all the time in your voice. It's quite funny to me. That is it. Make sure you guys follow Dr. Lori. Thank you guys for joining us today. Until the next episode. Bye.